From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. The 46th annual meeting of the World Economic Forum kicked off in Davos, Switzerland, Wednesday. Thousands of delegates from more than 100 countries descended on the Swiss ski resort for 5 days to discuss the global economy and politics. At one plenary session Thursday, entitled The Future of Europe, two men were featured who, last summer, were locked in battle over the future of Greece in the EU. Germany's finance minister, Wolfgang Schäuble, and Greece's prime minister, Alexis Tsipras. The German finance minister discussed some of the disagreements that are taking place now inside the EU.
We have to help the European states to become as competitive as possible and not reduce their competitivity. And of course, this is not easy to manage. I can only speak about my own country. I don't like to talk about the problems of other countries unless I'm forced to do so. We are currently in a relatively good situation, but it's only very passing. Now, the parliaments have decided that the IMF has to be a participant in these deals. Now, if this has to be changed, then I'd have to go to the German parliament and ask them to bless that again. And everyone in Germany would ask me, would that be gone crazy? Because I'd be going into a room filled with dynamite with a lit candle.
Greece's prime minister had a different view.
I'm not in favor of trying to bring a candle, a lit candle, in a room full of dynamite. But then again, due to that reason, I don't think that we have to keep ourselves in the dark. The best possible solution is to make sure that you get rid of the dynamite that's in the room and then lit the candle. In order for us to find a solution to the problems of Europe, we need more Europe. This is not the right time to talk about exits, be they Brexits, or any sort of differences and discrepancies and differentiations. We have to have one Europe, a deeper Europe that will be democratic, showing solidarity. We also need to increase our budgets to diminish social inequalities. We have to have a European bank deposits guarantee systems. We have to find a common solution to our shared problem that is unemployment. It's high time, therefore, for us to go back to the founding principles of Europe, the ones that got it established after two wars and a big financial crisis. We have to count on democracy, solidarity, and social cohesion.
U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry and Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov were also in attendance and met privately to discuss a number of international hot points, including Syria and Ukraine. Foreign Minister Lavrov gave a press conference after that meeting.
Good evening. We just finished our talks with John Kerry. We focused on the Syria crisis and the implementation of the Minsk agreements to resolve the Ukraine crisis. Number one on Syria. The most important thing that we did is that we concluded that resolution adopted by the UN Security Council is the basis for moving forward. We discussed the practical steps that are needed to be taken to provide conditions for a ceasefire. Кроме, конечно же, террористической организации, таких как ИГИЛ, и Джабхат ан-Нусра, они не могут подпадать под договоренности о перемирии, они остаются нашими врагами.
Exception is ISIS and Jabhat al-Nusra. Ceasefire does not apply to them. They are our enemies. We will continue to fight them. We will destroy them ultimately. We also reiterated the importance to resolve humanitarian crisis, and Russia's aircraft take into account humanitarian efforts by the Red Cross and other
organizations. We confirm that we'd be ready to coordinate our activities more closely with the U.S. on this track. And also we discussed closer cooperation on anti-terrorist activities. The U.S. Provided their own proposals. Some of them were discussed during the phone call between President Obama and President Putin, and also during our contacts with John Kerry and contacts between the Pentagon and the Defense Ministry of the Russian Federation. These talks are ongoing, and we believe that there must be more mutual support. There's still a lot of work outstanding. We believe we can find more arrangements here than just a memorandum that is in place. The memorandum on the procedures and rules to avoid any incidents. So the anti-terrorist track is a major one regarding Syria. And certainly, all the sides need to come together to the table to launch the political process. We agree that once this process is in place, we can discuss a ceasefire, which will not apply to terrorist organizations. As I said, we believe that the political process will be launched as soon as possible within January. There are different deadlines, but certainly it's the UN Secretary General that has the ultimate say. Stefan de Mistura is his special envoy, and he will report to Ban Ki-moon, and they're in contact with the Syrian opposition, with the Syrian government, and the Syrian opposition includes forces within Syria and outside of Syria. So he will then send out invitations to all the Syrian parties. We hope that this will be done in as soon as possible, and the talks will start in January.
The
talks will only start. It will take a lot of time. There are major challenges that need to be resolved, and that's are laid out in the UN Security Council resolution.
Сирийского вопроса.
So this
да,
is on Syria.
Россия, США и другие
участники
Russia,
группы поддержки Сирии the US and
не будут участвовать в этих переговорах
countries that support Syria will not take part in the negotiations between the Syrian opposition and the Syrian government, but we will support these talks in the way that will be most helpful for the Syrians themselves to resolve issues over the transition period of the new constitution, of the election, and other issues. We also talked about the Ukraine crisis, and we confirmed the central role of the contact group and the working groups. The U.S. counterparts praised the efforts of the Normandy of Four group. Victoria Nuland was one of those who accompanied John Kerry. She is in charge of the European track and the State Department, and our counterparts reiterated that they will do everything possible to help achieve results in the existing formats, in the existing groups, and not replace these groups. We exchanged views on the outcome of the talks between Mr. Surkov and Ms. Nuland, which took place in Kaliningrad. We said that this channel, these format of talks, is very much in demand, and it was set up based on the initiative of
President Putin and President Obama when they discussed the Ukraine crisis in June 2015. Certainly the basis is the implementation of the Minsk agreements in full, and it must be done in the sequence laid out in the agreements themselves. The U.S. agrees with that. The most important is to ensure that there are no violations of the ceasefire,
договоренности украинских сторон об отводе вооружений.
The sides need to pull out the heavy weaponry. There must be a disengagement mechanism in place so that there is no contact between the Donbass military and the Kiev army. Humanitarian issues need to be resolved. The economic blockade needs to be lifted. And so all these measures were laid out in the Minsk agreements.
Долгосрочную перспективу, от которой будет зависеть окончательное урегулирование, это политика.
So needs the political process that will define the ultimate resolution of this crisis. We both agree that local action will have a very important aspect in this. We'll have an important role to play here.
Специального статуса Донбасса,
must be based on the Ukrainian legislation and also such issues as the status of Donbass, amendments to the Ukrainian constitution. It's all part of a package of measures that need to be looked at as a whole and all its entirety. This is the main conclusions that we made, and in the contacts that will ensue, both as part of the contact group and as part of the Normandy format group, we will reaffirm this understanding. We'll also discuss other issues, including the Korean, what's happening on the Korean Peninsula. We talked about Iraq, Libya,
and we
came to the conclusion on the conflicts in Middle East and North Africa. And this conclusion is that the U.S. and Russia uphold sovereignty and territorial integrity of all the states in these two regions. And it applies to Syria and Iraq. Sometimes we hear calls that there should be several states on these territories, but both Russia and the U.S. are against it. We will work together with countries in the regions to avoid such a scenario. We discussed some of our bilateral issues. We discussed the timeline of our further contacts. This was our first face-to-face meeting this year, and I hope it's will not be the last one. And now I'm ready to take your questions. Does it mean that there is still no arrangement between Russia and the U.S. On the participation of the Army of Islam in the talks? There is no arrangement because it was not supposed to be there. According to the U.N. Security Council resolution, it's Stefan de Mistura on behalf of the UN Secretary General that has to send out invitations, and he needs to be guided by the results of the contacts that the opposition groups held in Riyadh, Moscow, Cairo.
Свои пожелания о том, как мы бы видели состав.
On the list of the opposition groups,
приглашен для переговоров с правительством, мы передали де Мистуре.
We have provided our proposals. The U.S. did the same. And other members of the Syria support group also provided their proposals, and I'm sure that Mr. de Mistura will review these proposals and will provide a list that will be very inclusive. Mr. Lavrov,
January is running out, and there's still no list of the opposition groups that should be on the list of the negotiations. Do you think that the deadline could be pushed to February? Well, there's still 11 days until the end of January. So there's still time, and we don't consider pushing the deadline to February. This is the position of the US and Russia. We believe that these negotiations will start as soon as possible. Interfax News Agency. We heard a call from the opposition forces that it's not ready to take part in the negotiations. And there have been other preconditions. What is Moscow going to do? I can only reiterate what I just said.
The
UN Security Council Resolution 2254 requires that a special envoy appointed by UN Security must send out invitations to the members of the opposition in Syria, and this list must be inclusive. Certainly, the opposition needs to delegate their representatives that met in earlier in Moscow, Cairo, and Riyadh. So there could be no first, second, or third parties. Everyone is on equal basis. It's only the special envoy, Stefan de Mistura, that has to decide on the ultimate list. Mr. Surkov said it was a brainstorm regarding the talks with Victoria Nuland in Kaliningrad. Have they reached any compromise? Well, when diplomats meet, they always switch on their brains, and that's the natural state of any negotiator. The Minsk agreements cannot be reinterpreted. It lays out the full list of actions that need to be taken, first of all, by the Ukrainian government and also by the self-defense forces, and there needs to be a direct contact between Donbass and Kiev, and ultimately they should lead to the resolution of all the issues. The sequence, the timeline of actions has been defined in a clear-cut way in the Minsk agreements. Tactically, there are always ways on how to do certain steps laid out in the agreements. I will not go into detail right now, but I would like to assure you that certainly besides need to look for compromises, but on this should be on how to implement measures in the Minsk agreements, but not on how to rewrite the Minsk agreements. RT, what you just said is that the ceasefire will not apply to Jabhat al-Nusra and ISIS. Does this mean that Moscow insists on including Jabhat al-Nusra, on labeling this organization as a terrorist,
Джейшуль Ислам и
Ахрад аш-Шам and others? Well, the first one shelled civilian districts of Damascus, the capital of Syria, including the embassy of the Russian Federation. And the second one is an affiliate of Al-Qaeda. We provided our own materials with the facts that prove
our position. Идентификация террористических организаций продолжается.
The process of identification of terrorist organizations is still underway. We hope that our position will be upheld and taken into account. Thank you very much.
Iran's Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif was a part of a panel discussion Thursday about the outlook for Iran the region and international stakeholders in the wake of the nuclear deal and the lifting of sanctions.
Global message is that diplomacy works. And that is a very welcome message that all of us should entertain seriously when it comes to other issues. Diplomacy requires patience. It requires abandoning the will to impose, the will to coerce, and replacing it with a will to negotiate and a will to reach mutually acceptable solutions. And I think what we did over the past 2 years, 2.5 years particularly, was to try to see how best we could achieve our objectives without necessarily harming the interests and objectives and concerns of our negotiating partners. And I think we achieved that. I think the deal is not a perfect deal. No deal is ever perfect. But it deals with our requirements, that is, removal of sanctions, and at the same time respecting our right to have our nuclear program for peaceful purposes, because our nuclear program was always for peaceful purposes. But now we are prepared to show even greater transparency in order for the international community to know what we already know, that our program is nothing but peaceful. And at the same time, sanctions will be removed, and Iran will provide the opportunities for both economic interest in the region and globally to engage. And I think that would be a good message for everybody. So both in terms of the political aspect as well as the economic aspect globally, it's a win-win situation, and it's a win for us, for all. Regionally, I think it sends a message that if we can resolve something that everybody thought was impossible to resolve, with countries who were, obviously at least Iran and the United States, were hostile for at least 37 years, then there is no impediment in resolving regional issues between countries and peoples who call themselves each other brothers and sisters, and who are bound by a common religion, common faith, common history, common culture, common values, which makes it possible for all of us to work together to address a very serious challenge in our region, and that is the challenge of extremism. Extremism is not a threat against any particular nation. It's not a challenge, it's not a concern that could be contained within a particular geography. It cannot even be contained within our region. It has already spread all across the world. You see the indications from San Bernardino to Paris, to Madrid, to Moscow, to Islamabad, to Istanbul, anywhere you just find the name, Sydney, Canada, whatever name you can find on the map, extremism has been able to spread and infiltrate in that part of the world. And it's a threat against every single one of us in this region. And if we could resolve a seemingly impossible problem of Iran's nuclear ambitions, where somebody was calling it a nuclear weapons program and we were calling it our right to develop nuclear technology for peaceful purposes, if we could resolve that diametrically opposed contentions that were being made and had been basically entrenched for over 12 years, how can we not resolve small differences that exist in our region? And I think that should be a message. I'm sorry that some of our neighbors have found that a threat. I'm sorry that some of our neighbors reacted to the nuclear negotiations and to the achievements that we had with an attempt to kill it, with an attempt to torpedo it, and now with an attempt to provoke a crisis in our region. I don't see why. I believe that we need to work for a resolution of all the misunderstandings and then work together for a better future, and I think that should be the message of the nuclear deal.
What is your today's message to the international community?
Well, we showed over the past 2.5 years that Iran was serious. Over the past 6 months, we showed that we could even expedite measures that we were supposed to take. Nobody expected Iran to finish implementing what we implemented in less than 6 months. Everybody was hoping or waiting for April or May before we would have the implementation day. Now we had the implementation day on Saturday. The IAEA verified that Iran had implemented every single bit of its commitments under the JCPOA or the nuclear deal. So it showed that we can, in fact, do it. Reaching an understanding does not mean one side giving up or submitting or surrendering. Iran's defense program is outside the parameters of this deal, and Iran spends a fraction of some of our neighbors in the region on defense. Our defense budget, particularly our spending on military hardware, is less than a tenth of what Saudi Arabia spends on military hardware. And I find it rather bizarre that the United States expresses concern over Iranian missile program, which are defensive, do not violate any current international regulation. Maybe when 1929 Security Council Resolution 1929 was in effect, somebody could have argued, but today with 2231 in effect, nobody can argue that Iran's defense program, missile program, violates anything. We are entitled to our defense. We are spending a fraction of what our very smaller neighbors spend on defense. So what's all this fuss about? I can't understand. Of course, there are domestic constituencies in the United States who were against this deal to begin with, who did everything to kill this deal to begin with, and unfortunately they were supported by the financing that came from our region, by the political pressures that came from our region. But let bygones be bygones. Let's start from now. There is no threat coming from Iran against any of its neighbors. No threat has come from Iran against any of its neighbors for over 250 years. We did not invade anybody, although we are one of the biggest or the biggest country in the region. We never invaded any of our neighbors, but we defend ourselves. And we are entitled to the means of our defense. And we will not abandon those, but we are prepared to engage in confidence-building measures with all our neighbors. I wrote an op-ed in the New York Times, and before that, I wrote that same op-ed in Ashar al-Awsat in an Arabic paper, calling for a regional dialogue forum where we could raise our concerns towards each other, including concerns over security and defense. We are prepared for that because we have nothing to hide. In fact, if people come and start to come and look at our expenditure and compare it with the expenditure of others in the region, they'll see that you need to help us with that a bit, because we're not spending even a fraction of what others are.
So thank you very much for this. And, you know, top of mind of the international community is, of course, the tensions between your country and Saudi Arabia. So, and there's a little bit of worry that we see a more destabilization of the Middle East. So my direct question, allow me this, Foreign Minister, is a war even possible?
War?
No.
No. I think our Saudi neighbors need to realize that confrontation is in the interest of nobody. Unfortunately, we don't have any Saudi on the stage, so I do not want to go to the judge by myself. I'll come back winner. But I just want to just make a point. Since the agreement in Geneva in 2013, our Saudi neighbors have been panicking. There is no reason to panic, our friends. Iran is there to work with you. Iran does not want to exclude anybody from this region. There is no need to engage in a confrontation. Iran has been provoked time and again. Two Iranian kids were molested in Jeddah Airport. I was asked to break diplomatic relations with Saudi Arabia. I refused. The unfortunate incident at the Saudi embassy has been condemned by everybody, from the president to leader today, to every other person belonging to every political inclination and grouping in Iran. So this was an act that we are not proud of. It was an act against our security, our sovereignty, and we are prosecuting the people who committed that horrendous act. We have taken measures in order to protect Saudis. We took measures in order to protect Saudi diplomats a couple of hours after that very unfortunate, regrettable incident occurred. Unfortunately, our Saudi neighbors were looking for an excuse to break diplomatic relations, and so they did. But I do not believe that anybody has any interest in exacerbating tension, in increasing the level of hostility. In fact, we should try our best, as Iran has done, to exercise self-restraint and to come to our senses and engage in serious discussions. Iran has always been ready for that. Iran is ready for that. Now, we believe that the interest of our region will be best served by cooperation against our common threat, our common enemy, which is extremism, which is ISIS and Daesh and Nusra and others who are ravaging our entire region and ravaging the world as a result.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.